Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We forgot one name on the Astros Circle of Trust. Credit Michael Beckman, loyal listener, for pointing out. Did we mention Aledmys Diaz? Utility man. Seth, Aledmys Diaz... I guess this is a purely a gut feel because his batting average, he's been pretty good in May. He's hitting .304, but yeah. The OPS reflects more how I feel about Aledmys Diaz. Like, there's nothing, there's no pop with him right now. His OPS in May was .681.
But he's a utility guy. And he's, I guess, yeah, his OPS in May was has been .681 so far. He's .712 overall, which this season is about average.
Yeah.
Aledmys Diaz. I feel like for the role that he, like I'm okay with him. I put him in the circle of trust. Like,
you do?
Cuz he does what you want him to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's okay.
because what you need is you don't feel like, oh crap, Diaz is in the game because such and such is out.
Okay.
You know, you don't feel that way. When I see a Diaz out in left field, I don't feel forlorn and distraught because, you know, all is lost at Brantley.
And when he's at the plate, you don't get that Miles Straw feeling.
He is, you know what? What stat nerd Seth would tell you, Sean, is this: OPS plus is like a normalized OPS. And the nice thing they do about OPS plus is they make 100 is the average. So like the average ball player is a 100. If you're over 100, you're above average. If you're below 100, you're below average. Aledmys Diaz's OPS plus right this moment is 100.
Yeah.
So he is exactly what you want. He is your replacement level. Just stick him in there. That's your average baseball player no matter where he is.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay. I
if
like
he was a starter, I might not be so quick to put him in the circle.
My favorite part of that whole thing was when you said what stat nerd Seth would tell you, as if that's a separate person from you.
He kind of is.
Okay, fair enough.
I have to suppress a lot of parts of my being to become stat nerd Seth.
I hear you.
Although sometimes I worry that I am becoming stat nerd Seth.
Yeah.
I evaluate things and suck the joy and life out of just about everything, the way a lot of stat nerds do.
I think you enjoy the stat nerd Seth side of you, for sure.
Yeah, Brandy's not enjoying my statistical breakdowns of her sexual performances. She's growing a little... as she likes to call them, love making. Frankly, that's a little too old school for me.
Yeah,
I call it coitus. Yeah.
Ah, oh, gotcha. Do you go over that before, during, or after the statistics?
Pretty much, it's an ongoing computation.
I got you.
I give her updates throughout. You know, listen. You know, the key is don't give them too much information. That's when there's overload. You give the player a little too much information, then they're thinking too much. So I just try to give her exactly, you know, pitch selections, so to speak.
Right.
That's what I tell. These are the pitches you should be throwing. It's really simple and easy. There's basically two. There's two pitches you should be throwing. Yes, exactly.
Just wondering what like the coitus spider chart looks like. What are the different categories and things? What percentile are you in? You're in the 98th percentile right here, but you're lacking over on this side. All right. So Deshaun Watson could get moved before the season, could get moved after the season. There is a trade deadline during the season. Seth, and Peter King has he's got a real detailed breakdown of the schedule for the upcoming season in his Football Morning in America column for this week. The schedule came out last Wednesday, and he says 2021 scheduled niblets, which got me hungry, quite honest with you. There are two teams, though, that have been mentioned for Deshaun Watson. And if we're looking at, okay, what are the possibilities of an in-season trade for Deshaun Watson? What would necessitate that a team to make a move for Deshaun during the season? One would be a major injury. The other would be if you're a team that had an expectation for a certain performance level and you were just underperforming. There are two teams that Peter King outlines in his schedule breakdown that have very, very difficult starts to the season. And they're both teams that have been mentioned prominently for Deshaun Watson, and they are both teams that have multiple first-round picks over the next couple years to include in a Deshaun Watson trade. If you are looking at the possibility of an in-season Deshaun Watson trade, I would say look at two teams, the Miami Dolphins and the Philadelphia Eagles. Here's what Peter King says about both. If the Dolphins can survive a tough five-game start, at New England, Buffalo, at the Raiders, Indianapolis, at Tampa Bay, they'll have a forgiving final stretch. They've got one road game in 56 days late in the season. It's the beginning I want to focus on here, though. They've got a really hard start to the season. Miami's got expectations this year. What if they start out 1-5? Could they be making phone calls to Nick Caserio? And Philadelphia, similar dynamic. They've got the 49ers, the Chiefs, and the Bucks in the first 6 weeks. So those are games where they're going to be decided underdogs. They've got a much easier slate in the second half of the season. But Seth, do you think teams could be inclined, specifically these two teams that have all kinds of first-round draft capital to give up, if they get off to a slow start to the season, could they try to, I don't know, trading for a quarterback in season, is that something that would feasibly jumpstart a team, or is that something that is, even somebody as great as Deshaun Watson, there's a lot has to do with trying to wrap your arms around the system, that kind
was
of thing.
Could it be the boost that it was when the Vikings traded for Josh Freeman and then played him immediately? Remember, was that a Monday night game?
Something like that.
They traded for Josh Freeman and
Josh
played him.
Freeman?
They traded for him and then played him like within 72 hours, didn't they? What a disaster. Yeah. I mean, that's the worst way to handle it, is if it's Josh Freeman, A, and B, you don't give him any time at all.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's such a drastic move. If you're trading for a quarterback, it's not like trading for a pitcher in baseball.
Right.
Where all of a sudden you bring this guy in and everything is better immediately. Like, look at Tom Brady and how it's taken time for Tom Brady, even when he was with the Patriots. When he got a whole bunch of new receivers and whatnot, it took a while to really get firing at all cylinders. So to drop a quarterback in the middle of the season and expect a huge change, I just don't – it doesn't seem like something that's realistic. It seems like it might happen with a bad team more than one of their contenders. It just seems like a desperation move.
I think those two teams, and to be fair, I'm the one bringing this up, not Peter King.
They might be bad teams at that point. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, but the Dolphins are the ones with higher expectations than the Eagles, I think, right? You know, the Dolphins were 10-6 last year, and they've already been presumably talking to the Texans at some point about Deshaun Watson. The Eagles are a little bit later to the party with Watson, where they've got Jalen Hurts, who hasn't really been named the starter by Sirianni yet. They've got potentially three first-round picks. I don't think the expectations in Philadelphia are all that high this year compared to Miami. Look, they were in position to pick sixth in the draft after last season. The Dolphins were damn near a playoff team last year.
My first reaction is it just doesn't happen.
Right.
But we've seen a whole lot of stuff happen in the NFL in the last several years that never happened before, especially when it comes to quarterback movement.
Yep.
So part of the reason it never happens is that it used to be that marquee quarterbacks just flat out didn't get traded. They didn't make it to free agency. They certainly didn't get traded away after 3 years after they got a huge contract. All of that, that's all changed completely. It just feels like I would want the Texans to get a hell of a deal if that were the situation. Because the Texans are the team that shouldn't at this point be desperate. Like, any sense of desperation that they should have had multiple times over the past 2 years, they just kind of whistled past the graveyard on it. So now that they're in a situation where the damage is done and they should not feel panicked, I would hope that they don't get duped into getting less than an ideal return back for Deshaun Watson. Like, the team that's panicking or the team that's desperate should be giving up everything in the kitchen sink to try to get Deshaun Watson if that's the route they're going during the season. And I just don't know. I don't know if it's possible or feasible for it to happen.
Yeah.
Is there going to be, boy, Hey, boy, that's a if the Dolphins were struggling and they traded for Deshaun Watson, my first gut instinct is, okay, I want the Dolphins to continue to suck after they get Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
I get very petty. Like, I don't like the fact that the Dolphins have already fleeced the Texans and turned it into an even larger bounty. And then for them to get Deshaun Watson, if they went on to have success, if it really ultimately turned into, hey, by the way, all of this was basically a Laremy Tunsil for Deshaun Watson trade at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Then I get angry and like, yeah, I blame O'Brien and I blame Easterby and I blame a whole lot of other people. But at the end of the day, I'm a Texans fan and I just don't, I don't want the Dolphins to end up winning that deal.
Yeah.
I want them to fail with Deshaun Watson.
Dude, that is a big reason why I did not want them to make the deal with the Dolphins when the Dolphins had the third overall pick. There's just something that is a kick to the junk. There's something that as a fan of your team just bruises your ego when you're trading for a pick that was yours to begin with. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm going to trade you my quarterback for a deal where the cornerstone piece is a pick that we had already given to you. Like, I'd rather trade with Carolina for the eighth yeah. pick than get my third overall pick back.
Now, if Caserio were to be listening at this moment, and I'm almost 100% positive he's not, but if he were listening, I would say, Nick, now don't let Sean and I dissuade you from taking an awesome right. deal if all of a sudden the Dolphins have the best deal. Nick had no part in that Miami trade or any other thing that's happened over the last couple of years. So by all means,
oh yeah, no, dude, you should. If you're the GM, you shouldn't get emotional about it. If you're a radio host, that's all we should do is get emotional about it. You know what I mean?
And I'm gonna tell you another thing that bothers me, Sean. I'm trying to click on this Josh Freeman article from about the 2013 trade for Josh Freeman. But TwinCities.com won't allow me to read the article because I've exceeded my number of free articles for the month.
How the hell you exceeded your number of articles on TwinCities.com?
I don't know. And listen, TwinCities.com, I'm in Houston, Texas. Like, can you not tell from my IP address? This is not going to be – you're not missing out on some fortune that's going to save the publishing industry by giving me a free article here and there. All right? No, I will not pay 99 cents for the first 3 months just so I can forget about you completely and then get charged $79 3 months from now. No, I will not do this.
Sorry. I still need to know why you were on Twin Cities so much this month. Like, what the hell's going on in Minnesota?
My limit says you've reached your limit. Please subscribe to continue reading.
Interesting.
I got to think this is the first time, unless I looked up something about Marwin Gonzalez. I might have looked up something about Marwin Gonzalez.
He's on the Red Sox now, though, I think.
Yeah, I know, but I wanted to see exactly how everything had turned out for him there. I guess I wanted to see how he was. That's exactly what it was. I was probably on TwinCities.com because I wanted to see how Marwin Gonzalez was treated through the cheating scandal.
There you go. That is the granular research that Seth Payne does for you people, is he goes to TwinCities.com and exhausts his free article limit. That's what he does.
You know what? If it weren't for the fact that I'll pay this 99 cents, but the problem is I'll neglect to save the receipt, and that means Uncle Sam is screwing me over at the end of the day because I won't write off the 99 cents.
All right, which we went through last week, which free agent, which trade, draft pick we were most excited about with the Texans. Which coaching staff member are we most enthusiastic about with this team going into this coming season? That's next. David Culley was asked on Saturday, what makes Pep Hamilton a good staff member? Here's what he had to say.
Well, he's been a good position coach for years in this business. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He knows about quarterback play. He's been one himself. He's done it his whole career. He's coordinated it. He's been a quarterback coach. He knows the whole offense. He knows a variety of offenses. He's a heck of a teacher. If you go back and you look at all the guys that he's coached through his coaching career, you can see that one thing that we loved about having Pep here is that all those guys that he coached, whether they were young guys or guys that had been in the league, they all got better. And that's all you want out of your coaches, to get them better. And he's done that. And we're hoping for the same thing here.
David Culley does a number on that podium, man. You can just hear that fist banging on the table, baby. That's enthusiasm right there from David Culley. Pep Hamilton, Seth, look – anytime you've got a team that is forecasted, the Texans are forecasted as underdogs in all 17 of their games this year. The next year, they are, chances are, going to be a team that's starting a rookie, a quarterback that they draft. You know, maybe Davis Mills turns into something, but even then, he would only be in his second year. It's going to be a long road back for this team to get good again. And anytime that's the dynamic, then if you're on the coaching staff of that team, then you've got to know that it's the NFL and you could wind up being a short timer. I would say of all the coaches on this staff, though, that if you were to ask me, okay, who's the one that is the most likely some sort of long-term solution for this team, I would say Pep Hamilton. To the point where I think Pep Hamilton might wind up being the offensive coordinator at some point for this team.
Right, and I mean, part of it is he's got a whole lot more experience being an offensive coordinator. If you go back to now, he hasn't been a coordinator as often or as long as I think some people assume he has been. He's been more of a wide receivers coach, a quarterbacks coach. His first big break as an offensive coordinator was with Stanford in 2011. He was the offensive coordinator for 2 years there. And then he was with the Colts from 2013 through 2015. So a whole lot of time spent with Andrew Luck. But then after that, he was a passing game coordinator at Michigan for a year or two. But that's pretty much it. Like, other than his stint as an offensive coordinator back at Howard from 1999 to 2001. But he does have that experience, and he's got a whole lot more total experience than Tim Kelly, being in different systems, both college and the NFL, whereas Tim Kelly had pretty much spent his entire career with Bill O'Brien. That's all he's known. You know, that last year was the first time he'd really operated outside the watchful eye of Bill O'Brien. So he's going to bring something to the table that Tim Kelly doesn't have, and when you remove – Deshaun Watson from the equation, it sure does. It starts to feel a whole lot more like, okay, well, Pep Hamilton was obviously actually focused on by Nick Caserio and or David Culley, whereas Tim Kelly, it kind of felt like he was kept around to hopefully try to lure Deshaun Watson back into the fold.
Pep Hamilton's a nice name. I wonder if there were other opportunities back at the NFL level for Pep Hamilton. You know, I mean, it feels like a good hire. I wonder how in desire he was around. Well, I mean, he was back with the Chargers last year, right?
Well, he ends up with a rookie of the year quarterback.
Yeah.
Whatever Justin Herbert's improvements were last year, and some of it was just simply, I think, being in a scheme that fit him better, Pep Hamilton did a hell of a job with him. So hopefully whatever work there is to be done with Davis Mills, then, you know, he can have a similar effect. Now, I don't mean that he's going to turn Davis Mills into the rookie of the year, but hopefully there's something to that.
Yeah. I think this text message probably expresses the answer to the question we brought into this segment pretty well for a lot of Texan fans. The question is, which staff member of David Culley's staff are you most enthusiastic about heading into the season? Text message, I don't even know the coach's name, but whoever replaced Mike Devlin is who I'm most excited about. His name is James Campen, and he too was on the staff with the Chargers last year, but prior to that, he's best known for being the offensive line coach in Green Bay for most of the Mike McCarthy era there.
And he's got some notoriety because he popularized a very now common form of pass blocking where you get away with legal holding. And as a defensive lineman, it drives me insane. But he does a really good job of coaching it. So where guys, when you see offensive linemen now just latch on to the outside of defensive linemen's shoulders – and when it's happening to your team, you want to scream that it's holding. He figures out a way to get guys to move their feet really well and to block to where it's not actually holding. And it can be very effective. It can turn less athletic guys into more effective pass blockers than they otherwise would be when it's coached right. So there's at the very least that. I think that because he's got a methodology that's been proven to work, that's worked for a long time in Green Bay, I think taking some average players and turned them into better players than they were, that part of it should be better. And I think with Pep Hamilton, I'm as much intrigued by his influence on the run game as I am in the passing game. I think you're going to see more definition. Like, when you watch the Texans run the ball in the last few years, really the entire Bill O'Brien era, there was always a feeling of, oh, it just looks like a big mosh pit down there.
Yeah.
Like, and not in a good way. Just to where there's not really anybody moving with any conviction in any particular direction. Pep Hamilton's whole methodology and philosophy as a run game coordinator is going to be different than that. I think you're going to see more defined old school power football.
I guess, Seth, the layman's way that I can put the Texans run game the last couple of years is nothing ever looked easy. For a team that had some good players on offense, I mean, they had a great quarterback, and they went and got some really talented pieces for the offensive line. Nothing ever looked easy in the run game for them, and so hopefully that changes this year for sure.
The one coach that maybe not be the favorite of David Culley would be Ben McDaniels, because I think wasn't he the one that David Culley messed up his name?
He did. He called him Ben Davidson.
Ben Davis, the assistant wide receivers coach, Ben McDaniels, he called. Look, what am I going to do? Criticize David Culley for messing up a name? I do that all the time. I do that with close relations.
I heard some people making a big deal out of that over the last couple of days, and I'm going, it happens on this show probably with you and with me multiple times, probably every day. So confusing a name. I didn't get that worked up about that. Plus, he's 65 years old. You're gonna botch a name here and there. I don't look at it as Ben McDaniels is ready to get fired or anything like that. That he forgot his last name or he misused his last name. Whatever.
I do like the fact that it seems like almost Houston by itself has kind of opened the door to older coaches getting big jobs between Mike D'Antoni, Dusty Baker, and now David Culley. How old's Mike D'Antoni? He's not in his 70s yet,
I think,
right?
he might have turned 70 at some point.
Oh, that's right.
Here. Yeah. Hey, keep talking. I'm going to look
up you know, it made me think of Bill Worrell, who just retired. I don't think we probably should have covered it more than we did.
Mike D'Antoni turned 70 last week. May 8th, yeah.
So Bill Worrell retires at the age of, is it 78?
77,
74.
Yeah.
77.
77, okay. Yep.
Wow, that's weird. Wikipedia messed up his age. That's not typical.
I'm just going by the articles that I read about it.
So he's 77 years old. That's I'll tell you what. It's a pretty damn nice spot in life if you can choose a profession that you can be good at until you're 77 years old.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty rare that you can go ahead and actually like be good and thriving at your profession and just decide to retire when you're 77. I would say to the young people, that might seem like something that you is no big deal right now, but maybe take that into consideration.
Seth, especially when your job that you've chosen to do that is one where you're doing it in front of millions of people. You know, it's one thing to, there's probably plenty of people that can sit at a cubicle and shovel some papers around till they're 77 years old. It's another thing to know the names and the numbers and the players and the calls and things like that. And then if you're D'Antoni, you're making in the moment important decisions about a sports team, you know, making strategic decisions in the moment like that. So I would say, that you've chosen a vocation that you can do into your 70s and that it's a vocation that is A, very difficult, and B, very public.
I'm just thinking about, I'm thinking about like right now, like a few of my family members that are contractors, and they're getting to my, like, they're a little bit older than me, but then, man, you get to be in your upper 40s and your 50s, and the last thing you want to do is to have to be on your knees on plywood all day.
Ugh.
So like this, but they've done a good job of kind of transitioning into, you know, being overseeing things than doing as much of the physical work.
Yeah.
But they're definitely not going to be doing that same thing when they're in their 70s. Yeah. My grandpa was a farmer, and he could still milk. He kept working at it well into, like, right up until the day he died. So that was cool.
Yeah.
It's not like he was the best dairy farmer in the land at the age of 90, but he was still milking cows, damn it.
How do you think the zombie versions of Payne and Pendergast will do at age 77 on the radio?
I actually think about that a good amount. There's a trick to not sounding old.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is other than that we should probably start paying attention to TikTok more.
Okay.
I think that's key.
Okay.
I think we got to start paying more attention to TikTok and maybe learn the name of an actor and actress younger than 25 years old.
Okay. Yep. That sounds good. We need to shorten our attention spans is what we need.
Yeah, but I also don't know. It's harder nowadays to figure out what the young people are into than it was 20 or 30 years ago. 10 years ago, it was easier.
Yeah.
Because people still watched television.
Yep.
People still went to movies. It was just, there was more of a monoculture where there were so, where now it's just all over the place.
A lot of
so
stuff,
I don't even
man.
Know from a, yeah, I don't know how to keep up with the youngsters, Sean.
Yeah, text
I'm just
in.
Trying to, I'll try not to sound so crotchety as I get older.
Yeah, yeah. Text, if young people text in, what are you into? 713-572-4610. Help us out. On the text page there. All right.
We'll buy you beer. Come on.
Hey, I'll tell you. We'll
do you
buy
drink
you
beer these days?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll
whatever you're into, we'll buy it for you. Just tell us what you like.
They like margaritas. At least that's what the young people that are related to me seem to like. Sammy's in Mexico, and he was checking into an all-inclusive place yesterday, and he texts me. He's like, Pop, they're giving me margs while I'm checking in. Margs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That sounds like slang. You better look that up on one of your parents' websites about slang.
Urban Dictionary.
Yeah,
what
the
is a
kids
marg?
Are margs or something. That's some kind of new age drug.
What is a marg? Some pill. You know, there is one thing that the young people like to do on social media, and a couple of Texans did it this week, and it's got both Seth and I worked up a little bit. We'll tell you who and what next. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Boy, a lot of texts coming in on what the young people enjoy. We'll get to that in just a second. The young people seem to enjoy, Seth, one of the things they seem to enjoy is bitching about service of some of their vendors on social media.
Oh,
specifically travel. There's a lot of that that goes on. Like, hey, my flight's delayed. Listen, at airline, you know, whatever it is. I don't want to single out a specific airline or whatever.
Well, especially I would imagine as more people become influencers too, because that's a career. That's another thing that young people do is they list being an influencer as a career goal.
Yeah.
There are a lot of kids that just want to be YouTubers, and our knee jerk reaction is to scoff at that. And then you realize, oh, wait a second, that actually people do actually make money at that. Like, the key is not whether you can get rich doing it. Are there people that are actually doing it just and kind of scraping by or making a living doing it? And they are. So, yeah, so some of these people, like, you might think, oh, this is just somebody randomly whining about an airline on social media. They actually might have an impact because they're influencers.
Right, right. It's saying that the tweet that Mark Ingram put up. Mark Ingram is one of two Texans to go off on.
He plays for the Texans now, doesn't
travel.
He?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Mark Ingram does. Yeah, he's. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah, Philip Lindsay. Also,
I was aware
a
of it, and then usually what'll happen is there's 80 new guys on the Texans right now, so I always have to double check.
It says he tweeted 4 days ago. Hey, at United, y'all just gonna not put my checked luggage on the plane? I have appearances and events. And now I have no clothes, SMH. I tried y'all out, and I'm going to try to avoid it from here on. Okay, so that's
fancy pants. He has appearances and whatnot.
Yeah, and
not like other people that might have important things to do, like business meetings or anything. These are appearances.
Appearances, Sean. Yeah. He has and events, Seth.
Events as well. Now,
he has no clothes.
The best part of this whole thing, Sean, you weren't even aware of this.
I did not know.
Chris Long changed his Twitter profile to look like he was United Airlines, changed his name to United Airlines, and changed the picture. So Mark Ingram gets a reply to this that looks like it's coming from United Airlines with the blue check mark, right?
Yeah.
And it says, you're rich, buy clothes. So that's, can you imagine if you're livid and irate, tweeting out at an airlines because they lost your luggage, and then all of a sudden they tweet back at you, you're rich, buy clothes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that is great. That is great.
They ended up, Ingram realized that it was Chris Long, and he said, you rich, Chris, how about you buy my clothes?
Yeah, that's funny. It's funny.
But the good thing was, the important thing is that many people on social media didn't realize that it was Chris Long and that he was joking, and they got really mad
at United?
United Airlines, for going back at him.
That's interesting. So should Chris Long get punished on Twitter for impersonating a company and slandering their good name?
People were wondering, this one person said, I almost booked every trip I'm ever taking again. He said, this guy actually said, I almost booked every trip I'll ever take again based solely on the 3 seconds this was real to me. So he actually liked it.
He liked
Yeah.
That's funny. I guess Mark Ingram got his stuff resolved because there's a picture of him with a thumbs up and with his bag. Okay, I'll give credit where credit is due, United. Called y'all out, and you answered the challenge above and beyond. I appreciate the hospitality and execution in getting my bag quickly. And by the way, I'm flying the friendly skies tomorrow. The whole thing was smoothed out.
Is somebody who travels a lot, like a good, well, at least I used to before the pandemic. I was traveling a lot, and it looks like I'll be traveling a lot again now, like immediately this weekend. The airlines are actually pretty remarkably good at customer service if you give them the opportunity to do so.
Yes.
Honestly, about 5 years ago when I started learning a few things about just calming myself down in certain situations, it's really amazing. Like, if you can convey to them without abusing them verbally, or not that I was ever verbally abusive or anything, but I witness a lot of ugly behavior. Mm-hmm. Like, a little bit of sugar goes a long way with an airline employee, and a little bit of gratitude goes a really long way, because a lot of times they'll help you out. They're going to help somebody who's stressed out and know that the person's going to still blame them for it. But it's almost never the individual you're speaking to who is the problem. It's the airline itself. It's the system. It's the computers or what have you. But the person standing directly in front of you can't do anything about the problem that was created, but they can help get you out of it. So if you can convey to them how desperate you are, but do it very politely, more times than not, you'll end up very pleased.
Okay.
And then what I always try to do is I write emails afterwards to, like, I ask the person for an email that I can, where I can send a compliment about that person to.
Let that
person's boss know what a great job they did that day.
That is great advice, and I'm glad you said that. That's the same advice I gave to my son yesterday. My son was flying out of here to Dallas, then to Mexico. It's his graduation trip with all his buddies. There's like 40 of them going to Puerto Vallarta. He was flying out of here to Dallas and then to Mexico. Well, it was storming up in Dallas yesterday, so by the time he got up there, the flight to Mexico had left, and there were no flights leaving the rest of the day on that particular airline. So I said, look, he's like, okay, what do I do? Because every other time he's had to travel before and there's been something like this, he's been a kid with a parent who does these things. I said, go to the service desk, and the main thing I said was, be polite. Tell them your situation, and they will get you on another airline if you work with them on it. But make sure. I know it's technically it's their problem. They've got to get you somewhere else. But you're going to be in line with a lot of people, and you're going to be like the 80th person that they've talked to this morning who's irate. If you can just be polite, you will separate yourself from 95% of the a-holes that have been across the counter from them this morning.
Sean, that's actually a little bit of nugget of really good advice for any life situation, is that whenever you're dealing with somebody who's dealing with massive quantities of people, do something, anything at all, to sparkle a little bit. Like, to be the little diamond in the rough, like, to show that you're just different than the 2,000 other people they've dealt with that way. And it goes a long way, particularly in stressful situations. If you can show a little bit of personality and be funny about it or what have you, it's like a little dose of humanity in that person's otherwise miserable day. And it goes a long, long way. And plus, you're potentially contributing to the greater good.
Indeed.
Making life a little less stressful for everybody.
The way the story ends, Seth, is that they got Sammy and his buddy on a flight... a United flight back here to Houston so that they could then sit on the tarmac for 3 hours yesterday during the storms. And they finally made it to Mexico at 8:30 last night.
Did he tweet out at United about the storms and how it was their fault?
He did none of that because I would have gone after him and said, don't be one of those people. Please don't be one. But he was very happy he was getting margaritas in line. I told you that a little bit earlier. You know what
tactic I've used a little bit? Yeah, I know. Sammy's going to be fine in life. He's got enough. He's got a lot of personality. Yeah. It's not like he has to work at it or fake it or anything.
Yeah.
The fake tantrum, like the comedic tantrum, can sometimes work. You got to be careful because it can blow up in your face. But if you make a big demonstration out of it and you say, unacceptable. If you gauge the person right and they get the joke, then it can work out really well.
Oh, like
if it
joking, doesn't, then like it can, sarcastically
then it can
really
saying, yeah, sarcastically, unacceptable.
Yeah.
I shall not accept this.
Especially if it's right after a person in line who is actually really like that in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
By the way, Titus Howard is the other Texan who got uptight about travel on Twitter. This was yesterday. It was 12:22 a.m. on May 17th. So it was early in the morning. He said he's never flying Southwest ever again.
He acted like it was the first time. I wonder if he was shocked or disgusted. Maybe he didn't realize what Southwest
boarding groups.
Yeah, like I wonder. read his tweet. It sounded to me like he was more upset about it, something that might be common to everybody that flies Southwest.
Well, the tweet says that I'm seeing here, unless there were follow up tweets, was "We'll never fly at Southwest Air again. Worst airline." Like, doesn't specify why. But Southwest then reached out to him. They said, minutes afterwards, they said, "Hey there, Titus. Thanks for reaching out, and we apologize for any frustration you may have experienced. Feel free to send us a DM, including a related confirmation number. We'd love to chat." Signed, Brenna.
Yeah. Southwest is pretty good at the customer service side of things.
Very good. I like flying Southwest.
They try to keep it pretty fun and laid back. See, like most Southwest employees, I feel like if you attack it with a certain level of humor, they probably are extra responsive to it.
Well, I feel like they use like a last comic standing format to hire their flight attendants. They're always joking around on there, and they're pretty funny, actually.
This is what I've noticed. I think I've flown United and Delta. Did I fly American once? I've flown at least United and Delta within the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. They're trying out some new boarding and deplaning procedures, which makes sense, but I feel like it's the wrong time to try it. Because there are a whole lot of people that still, not as much this last, when I flew a couple weekends ago, it didn't matter as much. But I feel like people are still a little unsure of themselves and disoriented at airports as they're trying to get back into flying. And now they're trying to add in this, you know, we're gonna board. They're boarding from the. They've started boarding, trying to be more efficient, like even more in a more
starting at the back
version.
Of the plane and moving.
Yeah,
forward.
But like yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah,
but also when they deplane. This is where it gets frustrating because they'll say like four times, okay, this is how we're going to do it. It's a new thing, everybody. Everybody stay seated until we call your five rows to deplane. Yeah. And it's still the same madhouse that it's ever been.
Yeah.
So that just annoys me because it's like, okay, they're trying to do something specific. Let's play along for a little bit. But people are just ignoring it and getting up and
doing their thing.
The other thing that I noticed in flying the last few times is that there are almost – no wheelchair assists on the runway anymore. Presumably because I think at-risk people are not traveling all that much, or at least they haven't been so far. So I remember a year or so ago, it seemed like I'd get off of every flight and there'd be like at least five wheelchairs waiting for people.
Mm.
And now there's none. It's kind of eerie and weird.
Interesting. Text page has, Seth, you and I threw the question out there. What is it that young people like? I know it's a broad question. We're getting a lot of answers on here. A text message, mostly video games and weed.
Yeah, because Sean and I are trying to figure out how to stay young.
Right.
But it's harder to figure out what young people are into these days because there's no, you know, it's not like there's three networks of network television and a few magazines and such. It's just everybody's interests are all over the place.
Yeah.
So what did you say, video games and weed?
Video games and weed, yeah. Most young people are really into travel if they can afford it. It's something that makes them look better than you on social media. They tend to do it a lot. Now, that's interesting.
There's two sides to that, because one of them's the pretty cynical side, which is, you're living for your, you know, to look good on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I definitely see that part of it. But there's also this trend, and it started with millennials, and I think it's even more so with Gen Z, where they care more about experiences than material things, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
Like, I think that's a good thing. I feel like that should be a good trend. I know a lot of us old school capitalists worry that kids these days just aren't materialistic enough, but we'll get over it, everybody.
Right.
So they're more into experience. So we need to buy them Greyhound bus tickets instead of beer. That's the new equivalent. Instead of offering to buy kids beer to win their admiration, you'll buy them some travel stuff.
Someone says on here, Seth, that young people prefer Cali, New York type travel, so get them an Amtrak ticket.
Cali, New York type travel.
I think probably more, you know, like more environmentally friendly probably would be my guess. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, with New York, I mean, that is how you get around New York is on the train, I suppose. But
Cali or New York, I would have thought that just meant like they like going to the coasts. I don't know. Okay.
It says get them an Amtrak ticket is what it says on that. Do you like Amtrak? Do you like traveling by train at all? I do.
I do, actually. I'm sorry. I got distressed. Somebody said, Seth already acts young with tight clothes and sarcasm. I'm like, okay. Yeah, those tight clothes aren't supposed to be as tight as they are, okay? I stress eat a lot.
Yeah. Nobody says, hey, Seth, nice skinny jeans.
Yeah. You know, what did you ask me?
Amtrak.
The train is nice, yeah.
I used the train.
My dad used to send me to visit him. I used to take the train down to visit him when I was like 14, 15 years old. So that is pretty cool. It's got a certain rhythm to it.
When,
it's fun.
When Amy and I go on our long trip every year, we always make a point to have one leg of it be on an Amtrak train for a couple hours. It's fun, man. You see the countryside. They got a bar car. You sit there. I got my system. I got a couple little red wine bottles. They got those red wine bottles of Sutter Home or Sutter Farm where they got the screw top there, and you just pour them in your cup, and you watch the world go by.
And you can drink without the damaging effects of drinking at altitude.
Yes.
Like, so you don't feel as hungover. You know, you get drunk on a plane and you feel like ass for 2 days because you get dehydrated at the same time. With a train, you're right there at ground level the entire time. It's a healthier way to abuse your body with alcohol.
People are saying on here, young people, they're into cryptocurrency and weed stocks.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially, crypto for sure. And then the, stonks, right? That's what the young people call stocks when they're trading stocks. They like to jokingly call them stonks. I'm gonna be honest with you, Sean. This is yet another word that I kind of know, but I'm not really sure about. Just like NFTs and cryptocurrency and everything else. Yeah. I'm using a whole lot of words to try to keep up, and I don't know what the hell I'm talking
You're faking
about.
It really well, man, just so you know. It's, you know, just mixing the words in and thinking. The NFT thing, you've become really good at kind of faking your way through.
The NFTs, yeah, I know. Yeah. I do. Well, I'm totally into NFTs, yet have never bought one, and I'm not quite sure how I would.
Yeah. Yeah. Young people love TikTok and having things done for them.
Honestly, this trend of kids not even caring whether they get their driver's license, this is just amazing.
It is wild. That is wild.
I can remember, I mean, there was nothing I thought about the entire time I was 15, because you couldn't get a traveler's driver's permit until you were 16 in my state. There was nothing I thought about day in and day out. And I went and I took the test to get my permit the day I turned 16. Like, it was just, that was everything to me. I'd been saving up for my first car for 2 years.
Same.
And so many kids now just do not care.
It's wild.
So well, because part of it is, think about, there was nothing to do in our houses. Nothing. You kids don't understand how boring life was.
Yeah.
You had to get out. Yeah. Where now, you go to your room. Oh, my gosh. I've got the entire world.
A movie theater and arcade right there.
Yes. Everything I want. Why would I leave?
Right. Yeah. Seth, I don't think this last segment served the purpose of us sounding younger at all. So, we'll trudge on. We'll do.
I don't even want to bring up all the various sexual things that people are suggesting.
No, I don't either. My God, there's some good stuff on the sex page, the text page. It is the sex page. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Ah, antibodies and stonks and crypto and NFTs to you,
indeed,
my
and
young friend.
Football playing Jesse's to all of you as we go out to Jesse's girl. Good job, Ben Gary.
I'm gonna go watch some anime. To any of you that think that I'm old,
there you go. In the Loop is up next. John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig. We'll see you tomorrow at 6. Have a great day, everybody.
I love his physique.
He is a flat-out football-playing Jesse.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.